are actually good ones to come to, because we're going to talk about when there's problems ahead and how to handle some problems and just little things to think about when you're in the throes of a problem. And then we're just going to kind of recap and just talk about joy in the journey. So it's going to be a good class for you to be here tonight. So I'm glad you're here. And by no means will you feel like you're jumping in blindly or anything like that, because all the classes kind of stand on their own and we just go from topic to topic. So does anybody have any questions or comments or anything that you're looking to do today? Nothing? Okay, so we're going to talk about some problems ahead, some self-destructive habits. Aren't a lot of our habits sometimes self-destructive? Sometimes we look at the, you know, harvest that's growing and we realize, oh, this was some of the seeds I've been sowing. That's why this is growing. And so we're going to look at some of those seeds that we're sowing so that we're not surprised when the harvest comes. But some self-destructive habits that I have found in my life, and these lessons, when I was going over them today, I thought, these are so key. These are things I like to go back to over and over in my mind, because there's such a slight differentiation that when you have something good and you take it a little bit out of balance, it can be a bad thing. And so the first thing we're going to talk about is perfectionism, or a healthy pursuit of excellence. Like, it is great to be a pursuer of excellence. We all want to pursue excellence. But when you can start to become a perfectionist, it will start to wreak problems in your life, in your relationships, and even in your satisfaction of the, you know, your standard of living and everything. So let me tell you some of the difference. Perfectionists reach for impossible goals. And pursuers of excellence, they enjoy meeting high standards, but they're achievable. A perfectionist values themselves by what they do, and a pursuer of excellence values themselves by who they are. And sometimes we all fall into that thing where we, you know, run privy to just valuing ourselves by what we're accomplishing rather than who we are. Not only that, I think that this works both ways. We can sometimes value other people by what they do for us, or for, you know, or just what they do, period, versus valuing them for who they are. So these are really good warning things and things to keep in mind. Perfectionists get depressed and give up. You know, someone says, oh, I'll just never, you know, be the greatest tennis player, so I'm not even going to play anymore. You know, but pursuers of excellence, they can experience disappointment, but they can keep going. And so if you find yourself starting to, you know, give up and lose that enthusiasm and stuff, ask yourself if you're reaching goals that are achievable, or you're basing all your standard of satisfaction based on the results rather than the process. And I think, like, a lot of times you can find that you are expecting a little bit too much of yourself or from other people. Also, perfectionists are devastated by failure. And I helped two people this week that were just seriously beating themselves up over just the craziest mistakes that they had done. One was with a toddler and one was with their husband. But I mean, it's just ridiculous how we can beat ourselves up over the smallest thing. And we want to know that we're not perfect. We're gonna make mistakes and everything, but we want to grow forward and we want to learn from those mistakes and we want to get better. But we don't want to give up or be so hard on ourselves that we don't enjoy this life that God gave us to live, you know, or the process. John Maxwell has a really good book. It's called Failing Forward, and it's for people that have come out of really big mistakes and how they can learn from those mistakes and go forward in their lives. And that's just a good book to encourage somebody in your life. Like, I had a couple of copies at all times, because when my kids were in high school, I was handing them out to a lot of their friends, and, you know, just to kind of encourage them that you can make a mistake, but it's not your mistake that defines you. It's what you do with that mistake, you know. So we want to be careful that we don't become so perfectionist oriented that we are just beating ourselves up for something that we're disappointed in ourselves over. You know what I mean? Learn from it, grow from it, you know, God wants our weaknesses to become strengths. And he said that, even Paul said, he goes, you know, I will glory in my infirmities, because the power of God can rest upon me. And because his grace is sufficient for us, and his strength is made perfect through our weaknesses. Mm-hmm. And so we can find out what our infirmities are, and rather than beating ourselves up over it, it can drive us to go to the Lord and to let him help us to turn those things around in our life. You know, so it's pretty powerful. Perfectionists dwell on their past mistakes. I mean, I hear people just telling me when I see them about, and going back to a point in their life over and over, and sometimes to the point where I'll even circle it on a calendar and say, okay, that was then, and now this is now. Let's leave that behind. And I always say, you cannot drive forward when you're staring in the rearview mirror. That's why your rearview mirror is very small in your car. You know, we have to keep it in perspective, right? So make sure that you do that. And pursuers of excellence correct mistakes and learn from them. Perfectionists, they want to be number one. And pursuers of excellence, they're okay as long as they know they've done their best. You're not going to be number one at everything. And I taught my kids that you don't have to be number one as long as you've done your best. So my question to them wasn't, did you get an A on the test? It was like, did you do your best? Did you study? Did you do everything that it took to be successful? And then if you knew you gave your best and you didn't, you know, get the end result, but at least you know you gave your best, that's a different story. Mm-hmm. I'll even tell myself that when I'm playing tennis, because sometimes I'll be playing teams that are really a lot better than me, and it gets really frustrating, and you can start to beat yourself up in your mind, but I'll say, okay, now wait a minute, you're not a potted plant, but if you're at least going for the ball, then, you know, then don't be so hard on yourself. Now, if you are just standing there watching the ball, you can, you know, you better give yourself a little pep talk. But, you know, but perfectionists have to win to have good self-esteem, and pursuers of excellence, as long as they know they can have a good self-image, as long as they know that they've done their best. That is a great recipe for a good coach too, isn't it? Because mm-hmm. You know, when people are coaching kids teams especially, you want them to have a really good grasp on some of these principles that are going to make you strong. But those are just good things to, you know, think about. That life is full of imperfect things and imperfect people. You know, you're not everything, your husband's not everything, your friends aren't going to be everything to you. That you complete me thing is ridiculous. No one's going to complete you, you know? I mean, but what you have to learn is learning to accept each other's faults and to celebrate each other's differences. That's what's going to really give you strong and lasting relationships. Last week we were talking about, a couple weeks ago, about the differences between men and women, and it was saying that the most successful relationships are one that you've stopped trying to like change the other person, and you've given that up, and you're just learning to be happily different. You know, and just, mm-hmm. You know that you're not gonna be everything. You understand that your husband's not gonna be everything to you. Your friend isn't gonna know every time that you need encouragement. Mm-hmm. But you know what? I think that the strongest value that you could learn to make your relationships powerful is that you can love people not just for who they are, but in spite of who they aren't as well. Mm-hmm. And I think that that will give you some really powerful appreciation of people and set people free in your life from feeling that they have to be everything. You know, so I think that's really good. In other words, my prayer is that you take the good and the bad and the ugly and lay them at the feet of God, because he's the only one that can give you a relationship where some lapses and they don't become a deal breaker. In fact, that understanding is the base of any relationship. But don't put the key to your happiness in someone else's pocket. Mm-hmm. Keep it in your own, you know, and God will be everything you need. He's the one that completes you. And no person can complete you, but God can certainly complete you. So with these choices that we have, these things that we're looking at, there are two different things that you have to just be careful that you're not doing the wrong one. I'm getting really hot. Are you guys in here? I have to turn this off. It's not helping. Anyways, smolder or communicate. Now, a lot of really good people, they think that it's really good to avoid controversy, and so they keep a lot of things in rather than communicate them. But that's not doing anybody a favor. Because the more you keep it in, that word smolder gives you a picture of what it does. It's like an ember that's just smoldering. It's just waiting to burst into flame. And as you keep it in, it's still there. In fact, you're shoving it under the rug and it's creating a big lump under there. And one day, eventually, you're going to trip over it. And so you don't want to be, you know, person that puts things under the rug and becomes a lot of things too. You can become really bitter and things if you're holding things inside. I think the most important thing is to learn to communicate through your differences and come to a point where you can have some kind of an understanding on how to fix those. It was really interesting because my husband and I counseled this couple, and they were the cutest couple. And they just didn't want to disappoint each other, and so they never disagreed with each other. They didn't want to let the other person down. They really, really loved each other. And we were just encouraging them, you know, on how to learn the style of communication that can get through and come out with some kind of a solution. And they just couldn't get to that point. And that was probably one of the most disappointing things one of the disappointing couples that I've ever counseled, because they were so good together, and yet because they weren't willing to learn how to communicate through their differences, they were more willing to separate than to, you know, do that. And so it was really funny because this past week, out of the clear blue, my path crossed with her path again, and they got back together, and they're learning to communicate, and I'm so excited. I was so happy because, you know, this whole principle, smolder or communicate, we have to learn how to communicate. Sometimes it's going to be tough, but we're going to go through some of the ways to learn how to communicate through some tough situations to come out with some good understandings that'll push your relationship forward. We don't want to just stay at a place with someone where we're just talking about surface things all the time. You know, I always say intimacy is awkward. If you're not having awkward conversations or sometimes feeling awkward with someone, you're probably not that intimate with them. Because intimacy can be very awkward. But that is where we're opening up our heart, we're opening up our soul, we're making ourselves more vulnerable. You're putting your feelings on the line with somebody. That's what having an intimate relationship is. So, if, you know, you want to make sure that your relationship is going deep and that you are, you know, bearing your heart to the person and the people that you love so that you can get to a level that's not just what I call the grocery store level, something that you could talk about with somebody in the grocery store. You know, you want to have intimate conversations. But, you know, I can tell you how I really feel without you judging that feeling. That is, it's tough, but you can do that. I love that scripture that God made known his ways to Moses, but the children of Israel only knew his acts. And it's interesting because the children of Israel lost out on a lot, because when they saw Moses go to the mountain of God and they saw that mountain quaking, they were like, whoa, we are not going up there because something, yeah, we might die. Something in us might die. And it looks maybe awkward or it looks scary to get to go to that mountain. So I'll tell you what, Moses, you just go talk to God and come back and tell us what he says and we'll just do it. But you know what? They didn't really ever know the heart of God. They weren't willing to lay themselves down to be vulnerable. And so I kind of feel that, you know, if you want someone to really know who you are, let them know your ways, not just what you do. I think that is a real problem, especially when you have young children or some situations in life where you're both working in a relationship and you don't have time to really talk about why you do the things that you do. And so you get misunderstood a lot because someone just sees what you're doing, but they don't understand your reasonings. I'll give you a little inside thing that really helps me. My husband always traveled. I had 5 kids in 5.5 years, and my husband traveled mostly 5 days a week. And so he was gone a lot, and in order to keep him close, I had to learn to talk to him about what was going on. So when he came back in, he didn't just see what we were doing, he saw why we were doing the things the way we were doing them. So a lot of times, even if you can just with a few sentences, if you're running through a harder day or maybe some things happened where you're not able to do what you expected, or you've maybe changed your mind about something that you and your family were supposed to do, you know, let people in on your ways, like why you're doing, the whys of your actions, you know, or even tell somebody, you know, I've been feeling this way, so instead of doing this, I'm going to do this. Let someone know. I think that if you can start communicating on that level, I think there'll be a lot more understanding of the things that you do and a lot less misunderstandings, which will help in relationship problems and will help actually avoid them, you know. So preventative maintenance. But, you know, we did that all the time. You know, I shared with my husband, like the little inside scoop, like the reason that I didn't, you know, want my kids to come against their authorities, and how I felt like, you know, it was really important that we stay together and, you know, realize that when our children were contesting the teacher or anything else, that eventually, you know, we're their authorities too. And I wanted to encourage them to respect the office or the person, and maybe not everything that they do, but when they were telling them to do the right thing, that they needed to respect and honor their authorities, because, and even if they didn't agree with them, you know, but if it was the right thing to do. And so consequently, it's funny because I was just talking to my daughter yesterday and today, and she's a dentist, and she was just telling me, she said, you know, you raise us with such a great work ethic that, you know, we're able to communicate to people, we're able to honor the people above us, and she sees all kinds of disagreements, you know, with authorities. It's very difficult to run a business with that. So I think that it's just really important that my husband was on that page with me. So, you know, when we had a problem and my son told me, oh, you know, this teacher said I was talking, but I wasn't talking, and I said, oh, well, your teacher is not looking for a problem. You were talking, or she perceived you were talking, so I will go with you while you handle it with her, and you fix it so that you make sure that she knows that you're not there to disrupt her class. And so we went through that whole thing, and it was really good lesson for my son, because a couple of his friends, their parents had gone in and told the teacher that their son wasn't talking. And it's just the way that you handle those little things can turn out to be really big, too. So talk about your ways and, you know, what your plans for your future. Like a lot of the things that we got to do with my kids as they got older and got married, those were things that we talked about, like on our date nights, at the coffee shop. And, you know, those are things that we planned, things that were on our heart before we even had kids. And then because we talked about all these things, we were able to walk together towards those goals. So I think that's really, really key. But little pieces here and there add up too. Communication is a really difficult thing to master. There's communication classes, there's all kinds of things. But there's a few basic skills that we're gonna, you know, look at a little later on in this class. But, you know, you have to make an attempt to deal with important issues with communication, and you have to make it so that you're easy to approach. Like, if you're going to talk about things that you're going to have differing opinions on, you can't be scary and scare somebody away from, you know, talking about something that you're going to, you know, not agree with. So you're not going to agree with everything. My husband and I we're a lot alike, but we're a lot different. And, you know, we don't agree on everything. But I am not here to quell any of his dreams, and he's not here to quell any of mine. So it's funny because this past weekend I had my 5 kids over for spaghetti dinner with their 12 kids, under 5 and under. Oh, and we were having spaghetti, and it was funny. Well, one of mine was missing because he's on a hunting trip with my husband. And my oldest son was like, Mom, isn't it funny how when we were younger, you would always brag about the fact that, you know, oh, I'm so glad I didn't marry a hunter, and tell the girls, don't ever marry a hunter, and then Dad turned into this mighty hunter. Yeah, real funny. I said, yeah, God's working on me, I think. But it is really funny because I mean, I never thought it. And then all of a sudden, my husband decides to take up hunting. Now he's like hunting for a week in the wild blue yonder and doing whatever he's doing. But it's like, really, if that's what he wants to do, I'm not going to stop him. Do it. Let him go hunt. You know, he works hard enough. He can go dress up like a tree and stand in the woods. I mean, that's what he wants to do. But, I mean, we are all very different, you know. And so we have to realize some of the things we're not going to see the same, you know. And we have to have a lot of grace, you know. And I think that it makes it really a lot easier to love somebody when you automatically know that you're not going to go with everything that they do, or it's not going to necessarily be the way that you think about things. But anyways, give a lot of understanding and a lot of grace. I mean, you know, try to see where someone is coming from. Communication will help you to grow together, and if you don't communicate, you'll grow apart. You have to be intentional. And you have to look for ways to have conversations. Sometimes it might mean taking extra time. Like we were talking, like going in when your husband's putting on his shoes and standing there and just kind of talking to him. Or even trying to say, you know what, once a week, why don't we, this was something that, you know, I told one lady to do. She could not find time with her husband. I said, once a week, say on Thursday, let's just have coffee together. We don't have to go to Starbucks. We can just meet in the kitchen. At this time, you know, 20 minutes before work, but sometimes in this busy world, you have to make time to communicate, or it just, you might have to go out of your way. You might have to jump in the car when your husband's going somewhere and say, hey, I'll go with you. I want to talk. And, you know, and sometimes trying to talk to someone like a guy can be difficult because a lot of times they don't want to talk, you know, but it's just sometimes asking them some questions, letting them know you care, or even if they're not willing to talk, even you sharing some of your ideas with them and then asking their opinion about something with it's not a yes or no answer, and letting them know that what they think is important to you, there's some ways that you can let them feel confident in them. And when your husband is confident that you care about his opinion, a lot of times he does have one. So he will give it to you if he thinks that you're interested. So I think a lot of times it's just taking extra time. And it takes some time. But dialogue is to love what blood is to the body. When the flow of blood stops, the body dies. So we got to keep that dialogue going. Also, you can understand or demand. I mean, you can demand, and sometimes it doesn't get you anywhere anyways. But then you just want to be understanding, you know. When he comes home, do you greet your husband with a smile, or do you lay your problems on him? You know, do you let kids come in and complain, or do you encourage him to take a few minutes in transition time? You know, if I know my husband was not able to take me to, we didn't get to do a lot socially because he was gone. And then the few days he was home, he usually wanted to reserve them for his family. And so I had to forego a lot of social engagements, but I had to realize that that was the way it was, you know, and I could have demanded all I wanted. It wasn't going to happen. So, I mean, unless he changed his job. So I just decided to understand. And I just love the fact that there was a lot of self-sacrifice on my part to give up some of the ideas that I had for what I thought that we should be doing. But then in the end, my husband knew that I was considering what his needs were too. You know, it wasn't really always about me. And so I think like that just kept us really bonded together, and so that the time that we do have together is so awesome. And now that he's retiring, we still have so much fun together. And I think that it was because like he knew that I was considering his needs more important than my own. And I think like we should really, you know, we have to get there. Like we have to learn to deny ourselves and pick up our cross daily, or else we're not even worthy of following after God. And we're not gonna have the rewards of the life that we can have when we give up our life to find it. A lot of times when we seek to save it, we lose it. But when we give it up and give up our ideas and ask God for creative ways to work through some of the challenges, we can find it. And for all of us, it's going to be different challenges. You know, for my one friend, her husband was so, you know, strong, and He was very active and he fell off the roof and he is now a quadriplegic. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's a different set of challenges. You know, I know people that their husbands had MS and couldn't even scratch their nose. And then sometimes I know other women that complain if their husband doesn't do some crazy stuff for them every day. But, you know, we're all going to have different challenges at different times in our life. But the key is to follow and do it God's way. And that is to, you know, deny ourselves and to live unto God. And when we think that we are giving so much that we can't give anymore, then rejoice, because God said that the same measure that you give, it's going to come back to you. And let Him take care of that. We don't have to demand that from anybody. It is just the law. It's a spiritual law of the universe. It is just going to happen. So when we know that the same measure we give, then seek to give. And don't even look for what you're going to get out of it. And just trust God. And I promise you that He is never going to owe you anything or let you down. And His word is always going to be true. But a lot of times we're waiting to get before we give. And that's where the problem is. Mm-hmm. And that's why a lot of times our marriages are just so self-seeking, each person seeking their own and not the ways of the other person. But when we give up that life that we think, we always find it. And it's really powerful. But you forego your own needs in preference to your husband's greater need, you know, to unwind or whatever his greater need is. You know, you don't, I know that in this world, there's a lot of demands. And I don't want the demands in my husband's life to come from me. You know, let them come from when he's outside the door. But I want to create a safe place for him to be when he's home, that, you know, he can lay his shirt off. He can be himself. He doesn't have to perform. He can, you know, regroup and whatever. If it's sitting on the TV, you know, watching football, whatever it is, he can recharge his batteries. He's at his home, you know, and sometimes you're saying, well, yeah, but what about me? What is my time to recharge? Well, whatever you're doing, look and see if it really has to be done. Like, my thing is, if you can't do it with joy, maybe you shouldn't be doing it. Like, honestly, maybe you should be serving Cheerios for dinner instead of a roast if you're throwing a roast on the table with a bad attitude. You know? So I think you just have to look at, you know. I've
done that.
Yeah. I know. You have to readjust your expectations for yourself, too. There's a lot of ways to get help these days. And I think that a lot of times, the ways that people want to get help is by burdening their spouse. Well, that's not a really good way to get help. Just your definition of help should not include burdening your spouse. Find out and be creative enough to use some of the helps available to you and get some help, you know? So my daughter-in-law is so cute. She's her husband's the one that's going hunting. She's got the flu and she's got two little babies. You know, so I was trying to grab her some groceries today, and I told her, I said, look it, you know, he's not home. Get a babysitter. Come over here. It's so quiet. Go to bed upstairs for a couple hours. Don't wait for him to come home. You know, just get better in a day rather than dragging out 5 days and being half a person for 5 days. You know, take one day off. But, you know, sometimes we have to be creative in what we do to get help. But when you need help, that help shouldn't be by dumping on someone else and taking away their free time either. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So also, I was saying, your kids will adapt your attitude towards your husband too. You know, if the way that you look at and talk about your husband to your kids, even if they're adult, grown-up kids outside of the house, it's going to impact the way that your kids look at your husband. And you know, I just see this more and more. Like, I'm actually going to speak at a luncheon about this, because I just feel that so many people ruin other people's relationships by what we share with them. And we have to be really careful that we're sharing good things about our husband to our kids so that we're fostering good relationships. One of the 7 things that God hates, in fact, not only does he hate them, they're actually an abomination to him, is someone who sows discord among people. And so we want to be sure that when we're using our words, which are a gift to us, that we're not using them to sow discord or make people look down at other people. You know, did you ever have someone share something with you and you're like, why are you sharing this with me? Like, mm-hmm. this is something I shouldn't be listening to and I don't want to hear it, you mm-hmm. know? Mm-hmm. So we have to be sure that what we're sharing is not going to be sowing, you know, negativity about the way that someone relates to another person. But also, we can be a bomb diffuser or a bomb detonator. Now, I learned this because my husband, he was a really feisty businessman and he was very aggressive. And so I realized that sometimes he would come through the door and it was like I was in one of those spy movies where the guy's coming through the door with like a bomb on him. And you know, if you do a certain thing, the bomb is going off, you know. So I learned that there were a few things that, you know, when you can see when someone's about ready to go off and detonate, right? And so that you got to become a professional bomb diffuser if you're going to live with people that have aggressive, hostile personalities sometimes. It could be your boss. It could be your husband. It could be one of your kids. But you got to learn to be a professional bomb diffuser. Now, anger is a good thing. But Aristotle even said, anyone can be angry, but to be angry with the right person and the right degree at the right time and for the right person and in the right way, that is not easy. Mm-hmm. Anger is a powerful thing, but you have to harness it. It's like a laser beam. Mm-hmm. But the first thing, like I actually, this really helped me in my life. So I had actually looked up, how do people that, you know, make sure a bomb doesn't detonate? That's what I have to learn. So, and the first thing is to know what you're dealing with. To take apart the detonator, you have to look for the override mechanism that will stop the explosion from happening. So, I mean, what do you say or what body language is going to stop that detonator from going off, you know? And also you have to get rid of the explosive elements. So, you know, you have to get to the root of the problem. So a lot of times I find that when people in my life are more explosive and they're, you know, ready to go off on you, I find that there's usually something underlying that's bothering them because they're overreacting for something small and it's because something else is going on. And so knowing that kind of helps you to remember and say, you know, I need to look underneath the surface. There's obviously something else going on. Mm-hmm. And I remember when I was doing this lesson on I love doing the lessons because it reminds me, but several years ago, and then my daughter, she was grown, but she had come in the door, and she was just really having a day, and it was all coming out on me. And I went over, and I said, this is not you. What is going on? I just put my arm around her, and she just broke into tears. So, you know, that may not happen with your husband, but and you can find out, like, hey, what's going on? This doesn't really sound like you. And it does help you to remember that there could be other things that are really the issue. You have to stop toxic levels of radiation from being released. I mean, we have to learn what combination of words and issues are lethal in your relationship. I mean, when you're angry, you can't bring up toxic areas. You know, and you know what buttons are going to trigger a reaction. You know what? Just be mature and zip it. You know, sometimes I'm just like, okay, it's easier to shut up than sweep up. Like, just shut up. I don't care if you have to put your hand over your mouth. Sometimes you just have to be mature enough to know that it's not the right time to talk. And you don't want that toxic stuff to be released. And you don't want to link this situation with past situations. I have a little saying in my mind, if you link, you sink. Mm-hmm. So don't, you know, handle the problem at hand and make it solvable. We all need solvable things. Has anyone ever come up to you and they tell you something that bothers them about you? And it's like your whole life. You're like, okay, I can't fix that. I'm like, it's like, okay, that's hopeless. So then there's no answer to solving that problem. You know, it's just like, you just don't think I'm important. Okay, how do I fix that? Like, you have to make your issues solvable. So really, a lot of times, if I'm going to talk to somebody about a problem, I will even sometimes write it on a piece of paper if I'm calling somebody or talking to somebody. And it's like, what do I want to get out of this conversation? Mm-hmm. You know, what is your end result? And keep that in mind and let all your little you know, pathways get you there, you know, so that you don't bunny trail off to what happened 4 years ago and then you're, it's never going to be fixed. Mm-hmm. In fact, a lot of times I actually have worked with a lot of people that have long-term problems with people. And I said, look, okay, when I'm knitting and I come to a big tangled mess, I don't try to untangle it. Sometimes it's just beyond untangling what's back there. I'll just cut it off, tie a knot, and keep going, you know? So sometimes I had a problem with my sister once, and I said, look, I can't go back and see what filter you had on when you took what I said wrong and I took what you said wrong. I don't know what I was thinking, what my filters were, but I know that we love each other. Let's just tie a knot and go forward and start making some happy memories again, you know? And sometimes that can work rather than trying to, you know, remember how it was said and all this stuff that people like to get into, which is very confusing. But a lot of times, you know, stop and look and listen, but know when to shut up, know when to speak up. If you can get that down, which is pretty basic, is kind of what we teach our three-year-olds, you know, but if we can learn when to shut up and when to speak up, we've got a lot of communication mastered. Like, when you know nothing good's coming out of your mouth, don't talk. Like, it's just that simple. Like, a lot of times, my kids would know, like, one of the things I said most often, especially when I was homeschooling, was, I'm not talking. Like, I knew when it was time. In fact, we were just talking a few weeks ago. We had a situation. My husband got me so mad. And I just told him, I go, you know what? I have learned, and I am going through classes on how, when to talk and when not to talk, and it is not time for me to talk. My adrenaline is going, so I am not talking. So you just have to know when it's time not to talk, and don't do it, whatever you do. But there's a few sayings I got in my head, and I think it kind of helps me just because they're just little pithy sayings that just come right away. Lay it down, give it up, let it go, forget about it. So a lot of times when things are happening in front of me, I'm just like, okay, lay it down, let it go, give it up, forget about it, forget about it, forget about it. Let it go, let it go, let it go. And no matter how many times you have to say it in your mind, sometimes those little words can help you. Because really, the issue at hand is usually not as important as your relationship. So why are you going to let it damage your relationship when it doesn't even matter that much in the whole scope of things? Not many things are going to matter as much as your relationship. So really, just let it go, you know, and you will just have that peace and be able to trust God for it. That's how, by the way, that's how Sarah was able to say to Abraham, you know, yes. And it says that she obeyed Abraham and said, yes, Lord. Well, I don't think she was actually saying, yes, Lord, to Abraham. I think she was going, yes, Lord. Okay, Abe. You know, I think that she was really trusting God, because that's how you can do that. But anyway, Psalm 39 is really, really good. It really helped me. And you can go through it. It's in here. And there's just really good things in there. It says that I held my mouth even from speaking good when the wicked were before me. And sometimes you have to bridle your mouth with a muzzle. Don't you? It's just like, okay, just muzzle me. Like, but, you know, sometimes even from saying the right thing, like, or something good, it's just not the right time. So just keep it quiet. And then it says, and then inside of me, the fire burned. And Lord, help me to know my end and the measure of my days, how frail I am. You know, and you kind of like say, Lord, okay, I know I'm not perfect either. So help me to remember that. And then it says in Psalm 39, when I opened my mouth, the Lord did it. When you can open your mouth and know that God is with you in what you're saying, then maybe you can talk, and not before that. So it's just learning, you know. And listen, ask the Lord to work on your behalf. You know, there's a lot of times when you're going through stuff and it seems like no one understands, but God always understands. I have a really beautiful sign that's hanging in my little area where I put my makeup on, and it just says that, you know, he hears our cries and he puts all of our tears in a bottle because they're really important to him. And I really feel Like, if I always talk about crying in this class, I think women are really scary when they cry to men. So I try, like, don't cry. Ruins the communication. Try not to cry. If you look at your face, it's really gets scary. And then the guys don't know how to handle that. And then it's just the whole conversation. You better just quit it for then. But like, I always say, if I'm going to cry, and plus when you cry, you get so tired, don't you? Mm-hmm. But when you cry, if you cry unto the Lord, it's different. Because he'll hear your cries. So if you're going to cry, make sure that you're crying unto the Lord. Because number one, he's going to save every one of those tears. Number two, he's going to be able to answer because he hears our cries and answers them. And he says he'll hear us speedily when we cry out to him. So really make sure that, you know, when you're crying out to the Lord. And just trust him to turn some of those things. And some of the things that don't turn, ask him for the grace, you know. But also, just trust that the Lord is more powerful than any situation, and his plans will not be thwarted. And even if something really bad is happening to you, if you give it to him, he will turn it around for your good. And I mean, what else could anyone ask for? I mean, that is a powerful thing, because we are going to all have a lot of tribulation in this world. We're guaranteed it. But we can go through it differently, because we can be of good cheer because he has overcome all those things, and he will make us overcomers too. And just like a really good dad, I mean, when bad stuff is happening, he's going to turn it out for our good if we let him, you know. So effective problem solving is, I heard that when race cars are built, they're built for the crash. The most effective race cars are built knowing they're going to crash. And so, like, all this extra materials put in them, and like the, and then because it's inevitable that those race cars are going to crash, and then the people are going to be able to walk out of them. It's also been said, like, a lot of people that aren't realistic in marriage, they don't expect problems. They're the ones that can't handle the problems when they come. You have to know you're going to have problems in your relationship. You're going to have a lot of them. Because you have two people forging into being one, there's going to be problems. But how do you know how to buffet yourself and get ready for those crashes when they come? So we have to do, you know, good things, you know, so that when the world is coming, when we don't know when the world is going to come crashing in on us, we don't know when that doctor's report's going to come. We don't know when something's going to happen to someone we love. We don't know any of that stuff. But we can be prepared. And there's some things that we can do that will enable us to walk out of that crash without harm and injury. And I think that we have to be able to withstand the crash. So some of the things that we can do is, when life is running smoothly, use that time to build closeness in your relationship. If you're not having issues right now, put some nice statements in. Put some nice actions in. You know, you have a few extra minutes. You know, write a little note. You know, if you have a good thing going right now, use it to fortify that relationship and go out of your way. This class is kind of like a workout, and you missed a lot of the challenges, but a lot of them is just getting outside of your box and saying those nice awkward things that you're not used to saying, or, you know, just taking the extra minute to do something nice and just filling your days with having an awareness, like, what can I do for him today? What can I just drop him a little text or do this? So when your things are going smoothly, use that time to make your relationship stronger, you know, and put extra absorbent relationships into your materials into your relationship so that there's a buffer of insulation. You put that fruit of the Spirit into your relationship. Be gentle, be kind, have self-control, have love, have joy, have peace, have long-suffering. All those fruit of God's Spirit are things that are exhibited in with a confrontation. You find out, like, a lot of long suffering. I mean, that's because you have to suffer long, you know. So, I mean, use some of those things. Also, have some fire extinguishers and know how to take little fires and put them out before they escalate. You know, have some little key phrases that you think about. Like with me, I'll say, hey, you know, we're on the same team. You know, remember, I'll see things start to escalate. I'm like, hey, we're on the same team here, you know? And just have some little mollifying statements that you can do to, you know, kind of put out the little fires before they get too big. You know, become an expert at forgiveness. you know, forgive every time you can forgive, because unforgiveness is like drinking poison and thinking the other person's going to die. You have to forgive, not just for the other person's sake, for your own health, well-being, peace, sanity, you know, and all those good feelings that we want to carry around with us. So it empowers you and to realize that you dealt with the pain and you don't let that pain, God bless you, that someone else incurred to you define you. And we don't live with unforgiveness. Unforgiveness, it says like if you don't forgive, there could be a root of bitterness and other people get defiled by the things that you don't forgive for somebody, because then you start taking that and you start looking for it in other people, and it, a lot of people get hurt. So forgiveness is a decision. Don't wait till you feel like it. Forgive. And it doesn't mean you forget. Some things are big and you have to forgive. It doesn't mean necessarily that, you know, you have to be best friends with the person you have to forgive either. Sometimes life situations make it wise for you to separate from someone who caused you a great deal of harm, but forgiveness is letting that person go and not letting, you know, keeping them in your mind and keeping a date that should have been in the past and left in the past. It's getting it out of your present. So I think it's just a really empowering thing. So a dear friend of mine was very encumbered by unforgiveness, and she really needed some kind of a more dramatic thing so that she could really let things go. So she actually took a bunch of helium balloons and she wrote all the things that she needed to forgive, and she brought them and she just let them go. And she just said there was just such a freedom when she just let them go into the air, and she just purposed that she wasn't taking those things back. And, you know, so do whatever it takes to, you know, have forgiveness. It's like, it's, you can't steer a parked car, and I think unforgiveness kind of parks your car. You know, it just leaves you stuck there. Also, keep growing spiritually, and I don't want to tell you guys that, you're all at a Bible study. So that's good. When you keep growing spiritually, like, I really do believe that God's plan for us is to go from glory to glory by His Spirit. He wants us to get stronger in character and in virtue, and I think when we grow spiritually, then we have a lot more forbearance and a lot more understanding, a lot more accountability to handle things the right way. So I think, like, to keep growing spiritually is a great commitment. One of the things that really inspires me is my mom. In fact, I'll tell you the story. I was at a shower recently, and I was with my mom and, like, a lot of the little octogenarians. They're all, like, older. With some of their husbands are gone. And I was sitting at the shower with my mom and her friends, and I realized, wow, these women are so incredible. They have just inspired and empowered me in so many ways, I don't even think some of them even realize it. And I was just overcome being surrounded by all these beautiful ladies. I was just like overcome that so much of who I am was because of their influence in my life. So I'm actually going to have a little luncheon for these ladies that have really impacted me and just tell them what they've meant to me. So I'm putting that together right now. But it is so beautiful and takes away all my excuses when I'm surrounded by ladies that have gone through horrible things. I mean, my mom lost my dad and then lost her daughter, which my sister, within 6 months of each other. And it was just hard. And some of her friends have lost, you know, their husbands and, you know, have had battles with their health. But these ladies are just committed to lives of excellence and growing spiritually. And they are so inspiring. They just take away all of our excuses, you know, and I just think it's so beautiful that you can keep growing spiritually until we step over, you know, to be with the Lord. And I've seen it, and I just think it's really inspiring. So just always make sure that you are growing spiritually and know what God's working on in your life too. Like, if you have an area that's a weakness that God wants to make a strength, you know, don't keep excusing it like that's just the way you are as a weakness. Let Him turn it into a strength. That's what He wants to do with our weaknesses. So don't just get comfortable with the things that are not the best for you. Don't get comfortable with those things. Keep fighting against them, because God has a plan for us to grow spiritually all the time, and I love that. Also, develop a way to work through smaller problems without being ugly. You know, a lot of times my husband, he does get, you know, get a little rash, and I'll just be like, I'll tap him on the shoulder and he'll go, "What?" And I'll go, "Remember when you used to be nice to me?" And he'll just like turn around and he has to start laughing. So I think that's one of the nicest things is I can always get him to laugh, you know. And I think a lot of times by me doing something that's kind of cutesy like that, I can get his attention in a better way and get him to not be defensive, and we can get through issues way more than if I handle something with a strong arm or some criticism or a harsh word or a demand or something like that. So sometimes find a nice way to get through those little problems, you know, and injecting a little bit of humor, you know, and I'd say, I was just thinking of what to get you for Christmas, and now look at the way you're acting, you know. But, you know, you can be really nice and get your point across a lot nicer than if you're really ugly. So try to find ways to defray, like, tough situations. And that'll keep a situation small instead of escalating it, because don't a lot of your problems start with these little things that don't even matter? Mm-hmm. You get through the big stuff, and then these little things take you down. It's ridiculous. So we got to work on those little things so that they don't become big things. Also, develop some rules of war. Even nations have rules of war. Have some rules for war. My kids actually have rules of war with each other because we've taught them to develop these. Have things that you will not do even when you're fighting, you know, and write them down. Write like 5 things that you won't do. You know, one of them, some of the, you know, general rules of war are just to declare there's a war. Let someone know when you're mad. You know, I've had people actually say to me, "You know, I've been mad at you for a year." I'm like, "You're kidding."
Yeah.
Or you. I had no idea. I mean, now let's fix it. I mean, you carried it. I didn't. But, you know, okay. But, you know, so just let someone know if you're really upset. There's no reason for you to be upset. And I'm not, no. And then accept their surrender. Like, learn. Let somebody back in. Make sure that there's a way for them to get back in. And don't make it so hard. You know, like, make sure that there's a possible way to get in. Because sometimes we're like, this is our problem, and there's no way back into our graces. It's kind of like frustrating for people. And also prohibition of certain weapons that cause pain and suffering unnecessarily. Some things are taboo. You know, some things, like, people don't want to hear that they act like their mother, you know, or anything that you know that's going to trigger a negative reaction, then we avoid those things. Or, you know, if they, you know, you say always or never, those things are very frustrating. Also, avoid friendly fire. Friendly fire has always been intriguing to me. It's the people that get killed by the people on their own team. You know, I mean, you know, people in the war that get killed by their own side. There's been some famous, someone I just heard of that was really famous, was actually killed by their own team. But anyways, we don't want to be the ones that are doing the friendly fire and killing someone on our team. So make sure that, you know, that you have the your rules of war, and that you're going to get to a solution and not be wounding and hurting the people that are on your team. Also, avoid being wounded and wounding other people. I do not like dealing, you know, it's like with a wounded animal, there is no rationally dealing with someone who's wounded. And honestly, when you're wounded and carrying around, like, you know, all these wounds and all these feelings and everything, it's just too hard to deal with. So avoid being wounded and letting things, you know, really injure you. And if somebody's really, you know, in a wounded kind of state of mind, I would not try to deal with that situation until you can resolve those wounds and seek treatment for the wounds, and then get to a place where you can communicate through it. So sometimes you got to be, you know, and handle it quickly. And what you can't see will hurt you sometimes. We all have blind spots. So realize and give people a little bit of room to have their blind spots, and you have your blind spots. So realize that you don't know everything. You can't see everything. So it's, you know, you don't take his moods or things so personally. A lot of times people would come through the door in a wheelchair and you'd be glad to help them. But when somebody has a psychological handicap, you're not as willing to, you know, acquiesce to something that they need, because it's not as visible. So a lot of times we have to realize, you know, that people have other handicaps that aren't as obvious as a wheelchair, but there's still things that we have to make way for and open the door for and to be courteous and understanding of. You know what I mean? So like maybe if your husband lost his job, you know, you might not want to be so quick to tell him about all these other jobs that other people's husbands have, or, you know, just like just little nice manners, you know. Define some of your unique contributions. You know, you have some things that make you one of a kind. So what are your strengths? Like, what are you bringing to your relationship? Like, you know, what does your husband know and expect of you, and how he's gonna, you're gonna react? Like, what can he be sure of? Ask yourself this week, like, what am I bringing to my relationship that's my unique contribution? Why is my husband, should he be happy that he married me? You know, what are your unique things that make your relationship what it is? And what is he proud to say about you to other people about how his wife is? You know, we're all different. We have all different things. Like, I understand that my husband is going to be the whole package of every perfect thing in a guy, and I'm not a perfect thing of every perfect thing in a girl. And, you know, and as a couple, our marriage isn't going to be everything. It's definitely got some strengths and it's got some weaknesses. And the same thing with my kids. They have some strengths and they have some weaknesses, and their marriage is the same way. But you know what? I mean, know what your strengths are too. And, you know, work on those and make sure that you're not, you know, hiding them under a bushel so that, you know, the only thing someone's left with is seeing all your weaknesses. So really make sure that you are putting your cute on at home, and you're putting your nice manners on, and you're bringing who you are to your relationships too, and not getting so sloppy. Sometimes I think we can mix up comfortable with sloppy, and I like comfortable relationships where, you know, I can just be myself and I don't have to impress somebody. But when people get sloppy about their relationships, that is a breeding place for, you know, troubles. Because we can just, you know, take advantage of someone rather than just being comfortable with them. So, or just, you know, expect that they have to understand the worst of us when they should really be getting some of our best. You know, I think that God wants us to live from the inside out, because he said, you know, we're going to go from Judea and Samaria then to the uttermost parts of the world. And I always tell my kids, like, it doesn't matter if everyone outside of this home thinks you're wonderful. If your family and your husband doesn't think you're wonderful, you're probably not that wonderful, because he knows you the best. And he knows you when push comes to shove, and when it's hard and when it's easy. And I think that we should put on our best attitudes and our best manners for the people that are closest to us, that have to deal with us all the time. So I think, like, we should live from the inside out, so that when, you know, our husband thinks that we're pretty amazing, then we are probably pretty amazing. So, you know, really try to work on, you know, making sure that the people that are closest to you get the best of you, you know, rather than getting the worst of you. Know when your fuel tank is low, and when you're overcommitted, you know, then try to eliminate that cycle. You know when you're pushing too much, and then you're just like overloaded. Ask yourself, like, there was this one song, I just loved it, said, when the weight of all the world is resting heavy on the head and everything's been said, then I realize that all I ever have to be is what God's made me, any more or less, is to be a step out of his plan. As you daily recreate me, help me always keep in mind that I only have to do what I can find. And all I have to be is what God's made me. His burden is easy. His yoke is easy. His burden is light. So if your burden is heavy, you're probably not carrying what his burden is for you, right? You're probably doing a little more than you're supposed to be. So really, he made us to be human beings and not human doings. And there are certain times in our life where we are busy. I mean, I have a lot going, and I'm a part of a lot of people's lives and everything, but I mean, sometimes it's time to step back and say no to certain things, to say yes to other things, so that you can have a life and demonstrate peace. I mean, Jesus himself walked around with peace on this earth. He didn't walk around frenetically running from place to place, mowing people over, being rude, honking, getting freaked out if someone, you know, stepped in front of him. I mean, seriously, I mean, that was Jesus, and we're not Jesus, so we can relax a little bit. We don't have to, you know, we have to put our things in perspective. You know, we don't have to be crazy. And then there's a lot of tips to, like, there's a lot of tips in here, you know, just to, you know, help you through some rough times, but we're not going to have time to get over them. But don't try to over-discuss some of the things in your head, too. Some thoughts need to be cast out. Don't give every single one of your thoughts credibility and credence. Like some things, you know, I went to this one marriage retreat and they were like, just tell your husband everything you think about him. And you're like, oh, no. That would not be good. We're discerning women, discriminating, picky, whatever you want to call it. You know, demanding, whatever it is, you know? And we have to realize a lot of our thoughts don't necessarily come from God and aren't necessarily worthy of repeating. They're supposed to be cast down. I mean, anything that exalts itself against obeying Christ is to be cast out, not to be spoken out. So be sure that some of the thoughts that you are thinking, you know, what you think about, I always attack my thoughts way worse than my actions, because if my thoughts are right, my actions are going to be perfect. So I don't worry about what I do. I worry about what I think. And I say, search me, oh God, and know my heart and try me and know my thoughts. And if there's a wicked way in me, lead me to the way everlasting, because he knows our reins and he tries our hearts. And you know what those reins are? The reins are the parts of the horse of what makes the horse go a certain way. He knows what's going to pull you a certain way. And there's thoughts that come in your head from eating the wrong food, from not getting enough sleep. Satan himself can put a thought in your head. You can be crabby. You can be emotional, hormonal, and thoughts could be coming in your head. You need to know what to do with thoughts. You know, and a lot of times, like, people are like, just pray that I have the right thoughts. I said, no, God didn't tell us to pray for right thoughts. He said that you put the right thoughts in your head and you cast down the wrong thoughts and you put the right thoughts into obeying Christ into your head. So we have to get really responsible for our thought life, and then we might find we'll have more power in our real life, you know, what we're doing in the, with our actions when our thought life is right. Like, I like to think of my mind as a frying pan so heated up by the power of the Holy Spirit that when the wrong thoughts come in, they have to sizzle off. Like, seriously, you don't have the luxury to allow yourself to ruminate and think certain thoughts. We are not just on our own. We are serving a God that expects us to take responsibility for what we're thinking about inside. And we really have to worry about that, because from, you know, inside of your heart, your mouth is going to speak. The way that you act is going to come from all the things that you're thinking about. That's why if you're having a problem with someone, you don't necessarily just change the way you act towards that person. You change the way you think about that person. And when you change the way you think about that person, you're going to act right all the time. And so really, really just guard your mind, your thought life, and do a Bible study on the word and mind and thoughts, and really take responsibility for the things that you're ruminating about. There's so much power in what happens when you start thinking things, and the little patterns in your brain and the way that your thoughts get organized, and all that stuff is so interesting to me, because it just shows that the Bible is right. As a man thinketh, so is he. And so we really don't want to just worry about what we say. We want to worry about how we're thinking about that coworker, how we're thinking about that husband, how we're thinking about that person, you know, and the way that we think about it. And that is going to make us a more powerful woman of God. It's just going to make us more powerful, and it's going to give us more successful relationships too, because you're going to start looking at people in a different way, because you're going to be thinking of things a different way. So and we go through different abuses for serious things in here, but I'm not going to get into that now. But there are some serious things that you can't make right by a good attitude. There's some very serious problems that people are having today that need some accountability. And they need some, you know, people to help them through some serious problems. But we're not going to get into that today. But if you ever have anything like that, get help. Like, again, shoving it under the rug isn't going to take away some problems. Some problems really need to be addressed. And there's a lot of help available, and we have to utilize some help. If you have somebody in a an abusive situation or addictive situation, some of those things are bigger than we're going to go into right now. So, but we're going to talk about joy in the journey. And there's just, God gave us this life and gave us all things richly to enjoy. Our life is a gift. And I always say that's why we call it a present. And He wants us to enjoy our present. And He said that when our ways please Him, even our enemies will be at peace with us. And He wants our days on earth to reflect His glory and to show a little bit of heaven on earth. Your life should be showing the world what walking with the favor of God on your life looks like. And so we want to be careful that we are the salt of the earth, and if the salt loses its savor, there's not going to be anything to salt the world with. And so we want to make sure that we're living a life that shows the glory of God on it, and that we're taking steps to change it if it's not so. Because we all get away from that, and we all get caught up in problems, we all get caught up in, you know, the cares of this world, which can so easily choke out the word of God in our lives, right? We know that from the parable of the sower. So we want to make sure that we're really examining and taking time with God and getting in that huddle in the morning to see what we need to get rid of out of our lives, what's cluttering it up, what's choking it out, and where we can be more fruitful. A lot of times my kids are always like, Mom, why are you doing that? I'm like, my hourglass is going, my sand is going quick. I got to utilize every, I'm going for maximum impact here, you know. So, you know, we have to consider our days and be wise. You know, and it says that, you know, we have to, you know, consider our days and number our days and be wise. And an interesting thing is, I said to somebody, I said, look at, if you took, you know, say 90 M&Ms and put them in a jar, it doesn't look like that many. And that's how many years we get. It's not really that many. If, you know, it doesn't look like that many. Now, if you take 90 and you take how old you are out of it and see what's left, it would be scary. We don't even want to look at that, okay? But you know what? I think it should make us wise. We don't want to waste a day. When I was working at Gilda's Club, where they had even a death sentence on them, that their days were really numbered and they didn't have years. They had months, okay, and they were just like, one, you know, they say, hey, we used to complain about the weather, we used to complain about this, now we're just happy to be alive, we're using our days. And they would just come in wanting to serve people, climbing in, they couldn't even help, can I help you? I'm like, no, don't try to help me carry my stuff to the car. But they were just so interested in using their time to be a blessing, and we want to do that. We want to have joy in our journey. We want to use our days and really make them count for something. And it doesn't have to be something huge. It can just be in your own sphere of influence. You know, it can be where you're going to the grocery store. It can be, you know, so many times we're like, oh God, we've got to do something big. We're doing something, you know, I want to do something huge. And God's going, you know, go help that lady next door. She can't get groceries. You know, God loves normal people. I mean, he was a carpenter's son, okay? I mean, he kind of showed that normal isn't, like, always bad. And some of the normal people that he touched going through his day is an inspiration to us. And that we don't have to be doing, you know, going for crazy. We can just use the situations at hand during our busy lives to be a blessing and be an example and to find joy and go around like Jesus, just doing good wherever you can find it. And you know what? And when you do that, you do have joy. Because it's not about, you're not looking at what you can get out of it. You're looking at what you can give. And again, it's God's recipe for happiness. You know, is what is the more you give away, the more you're getting back. And so when you go through your life intentionally doing that, you're going to find you get more joy. And I was looking up joy because I was like, oh, I thought I was in prison because I had 5 kids in 5.5 years. And I was like, whoa. And my husband was gone. And I was just like, okay, I am not getting out of Philippians, so I have joy. But I learned, like, you know, joy is when you love what's right and hate what's evil. You will be anointed with joy above anybody. So learn to love good things. Learn to not like what's evil, and you'll get anointed with joy. Also, in the presence of the Lord is fullness of joy. We don't ever have to leave his presence. You know, you can cook with him. You can walk with him. He'll go with you anywhere where you let him be with you. He's with you. It's just you being aware of him with you, walking with him and talking to him. In the presence of the Lord, there's fullness of joy. If you're ever lacking joy at work, go to the nearest bathroom. Just be like Superwoman. Just get in there, talk to God. You'll be anointed with joy. You can come out a different woman. So, I mean, seriously, that's the way you get joy. Doing things God's way, financial freedom. I mean, living within your means, not just physically and being realistic in what you expect from yourself, but financially, not getting yourself into bondage, living well below so that you have enough to go around. God wants us to have enough to go around. It says, God won't leave us. He said, let your character be free from the love of money and be satisfied with what you have. Financial freedom has so much rewards. First of all, you know, with Christmas coming up, I already told my kids, I'm like, kids get disgusting when they get too many presents to me. So, like, I don't like the whole gift thing with the kids. We always tried to focus more on giving, so we adopted families. I always gave my kids, like, 3 gifts maximum, and then a lot of times, I actually have, if any of you have, you know, young moms that want some tips on that, on my Raising Kids blog, there's some really good tips for Christmas, what you can do with your families. You can get it at KarenBudzinski.com. It's on my website. You can link to it. But, I mean, there's just so many things that you can do to make Christmas so giving and so much about that and so nice. And then you don't have to worry about, you know, overloading your kids and raising this entitled, you know, generation. It's so entitled. And you just, you have to create, you know, that need for these kids to want to work hard and stuff. But you have to keep them, you know, without giving them everything first, you know. Also, it's nice to know that, I mean, there's a lot of reasons to stay financially free, but, you know, then it just keeps you that you're not the servant to the lender. You know, you're not, you know, you just, godliness with contentment is great, great gain. Like, sometimes in my life where we had nothing, but I said, you know what? I'm going to make my home life so good that I don't need to go on a break from it. You know, and during those times, we didn't get to go on a lot of vacations. You know, and then now as time's gone on and my husband's job, we go on way too many vacations, in my opinion, because I made my home life so good. I love being home, and now we're always gone. It's like, oh, got to find a balance here. But my husband likes to go, go, go now. But really, like, learn to be, you know, just learn to be free. Just things, don't let things bring you into bondage. And also, consider the things, the upkeep of the stuff that you have to get. Like, a lot of times we want, like, oh, I just wish I had a deck. Well, do you know that every year you have that deck, you have to, like, take care of it and furnish it? It's like, oh, my goodness. I mean, oh, I wish I had a pool. Well, I mean, you might as well just cut a square in your backyard and throw money in it. Because, so, I mean, you have to decide what is worth it and what the maintenance is on it. And, you know, if you can afford and want to pay the maintenance of it and then get it. Otherwise, go enjoy it somewhere else and keep your life free from all the servicing of all those things. Mm-hmm. I mean, my husband wanted to get a hot tub. Oh, my goodness. I had to literally learn science classes and keeping the pH right with all those football players in it. It was miserable. I was always cleaning it and scrubbing it and getting grossed out by it, and the pH was always off, and oh my goodness, the foam was always scuzzy. I mean, I was really relieved to get rid of that hot tub. It was like a lot of work. My husband's like, oh yeah, I love the hot tub. I'm like, yeah. Oh. I guess. Wait till you go to the Holiday Inn. Have it, every one of them. So, I mean, really consider, you know, debt also eliminates your choices. You know, God says, you know, guard yourself and keep free from covetousness. which is the immoderate desire for wealth and the longing to have more. For a man's life doesn't consist in possessing overflowing abundance, what is over and above his needs, you know. And if you have stuff, I mean, get it to someone who's going to use it. You know, learn to be content with a lot or a little. That takes away your choices, but budgeting does take discipline, but we can learn to work within, you know, budgets and avoid compulsive purchases and things like that. You know, I always said, too, that I had no right when we were younger and having all those kids. It was a lot because, you know, we started off with practically nothing, and my husband was working two jobs and then one job with two jobs worth of hours. And, you know, we always said that while we owed money, we didn't really have money to spend because we owed the bank money. So we would try to pay off our things, you know, and not live extravagantly spending money when we owed money, because we really didn't own all our money until those debts were paid off. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, having that mindset, I think, saved us from going over our heads, especially when, you know, having five kids with all their bills and their schools and all that stuff. I mean, you have to really plan ahead. I always tell my kids, you don't realize how much money you don't have because you think you have extra money, but you don't realize your roof's getting ready to go, your furnace is going to go every 15 years, your car, you need new cars, and your doctor's bills pop up. We've had three ambulance things with my grandkids in the last few months, mm-hmm. and, you know, and it kind of threw them for a loop, but I'm like, no, this is life. Life is an emergency fund. Like, you have to realize, just because you have extra money, you don't realize how much money you don't have, because you've got to put it away for when the emergencies come. So it's always good to keep things simple. I'm not going to go through a whole lot of that money, but I love this poem about friendship. Now, this is such a beautiful poem. It says, "Oh, the comfort, the inexpressible comfort of feeling safe with a person, having neither to weigh thoughts nor measure words, but pouring them all out as they are, chaff and grain together, certain that a faithful hand will take and sift them, keep what's worth keeping, and with the breath of kindness, blow the rest away." Don't we always want someone like that we can just be ourselves with? But a lot of times, we can't control, like, having that person in our life. But we can control being that person to somebody else. And so a lot of times, if you're disappointed with somebody, or maybe someone didn't, you know, you felt like no one really understood something you were going through, or didn't show up when you were sick, or just anything that you carry as a disappointment, a lot of times I always try to turn that around and to take it and do something that I can control with it, and it's to be that kind of person to somebody else. And so a lot of times, turn that around and try to be that kind of person that someone can be themselves to. Can your husband tell you things, and will you take, you know, the way he says it and give him a little bit of room for error and not hold him accountable for every word that he says wrong, and be kind even if he's like more upset or if something's bothering him or he's not communicating it the right way? We want to be that kind of person. So we want to let people know that they don't have to jump through hoops to be enough for us, you know, that they're enough for us, that we love them because of who they are and who they're not, because that's the key part, because they're not good. They don't have to be everything to be something to us. And when we can let people know that, then we've got some good relationships going, because people will be able to know that they're enough for us and not feel that they're always disappointing us. And that's a horrible way to feel, isn't it? Mm-hmm. I'm sure we've all felt that way with someone, and I don't want people to feel that way with me, whether it's a daughter-in-law, a grandchild. I don't want people to feel like I'm disappointed in them. I want to empower people mm-hmm. to live bigger, not to demean people, to feel like insecure of who they are around me. So also, you know, let people rephrase stuff. And if you are together, you know, make sure that you know, your husband's proud to introduce you, like, talk about you. If someone says, what's your wife like? What does he say? Like, you know, what's he proud of you for? What does he brag about you for? And what do you do for him, you know, that's different, that he's so proud of? And look for those things. And, you know, we all put this little perfume on before we go out the door. We all have our little scent, you know, and discover what your scent is and live it out, and live it out purposefully and intentionally. And you have to do it on purpose, because if you're just waiting, you know, for the time to come up or the mood to strike you, it's not going to happen. But one thing I found in doing these classes is, like, when you intentionally set out to put a fragrance on that's going to be noteworthy for someone to carry, and to give that fragrance to somebody, and you do it intentionally, that's when it's going to happen. It's got to be strategic, though. It can't just be like, well, when I feel like it, you know what I mean? You've got to get up and you've got to intentionally go, today I am going to let this person know how special they are to me. I'm going to do this. I'm going to be that. And you have to do it intentionally, or else it doesn't happen most of the time. But a lot of women, they're well-meaning women, but they repel their husbands rather than attract them. A lot of, you know, we always talk about, you know, that their husbands don't want to go out of their way to please you because they feel like they can't please you. And if a husband feels like he can never make you happy, it's really easy for them to just give up trying, you know. And so we want to be the person, you know, that makes our husband feel like a million bucks. You know, no one else is going to do it. We have a lot of cheerleaders, you know. We have a lot of women that we come in contact with. Our husbands really don't have that many cheerleaders. Most of the time, it's usually us. One cheerleader cheer team, you know. So you got to keep those pom-poms going, you know. Because in this life, I found that when you're running a race, because I like to run races, and when you're just running and you're trudging along, and then all of a sudden you see those people cheering, you kind of pick up your stuff and you try to look like you're going to make it. And, you know, we want to be that for our husbands, and we want to cheer people on even more for the people in your life. You know, people are getting weary, and we just get so disillusioned a lot with things, and we find ourselves getting so, you know, we get pulled down. Our emotions are like water. It usually goes to the lowest point. And so we want to be someone who's going to encourage people, which is to add courage to them to meet the challenges of our lives, you know? And think about the things that you're putting in, you know? And a lot of times you see husbands leave these wonderful women and they go for these other women. You're like, his wife is so awesome. But yet sometimes we can be so awesome that we can make our husbands feel like, you know, worthless around us. Like we can be the big old 260x magnifying mirror showing all the open pores to someone, making them feel so lousy because of how virtuous you are, and make them feel like they don't have anything to offer. But yet some other person can make them feel like a million bucks. And you know what? I think that it's a challenge to us to make our husbands feel like a million bucks. I think, like, you should make them feel valuable to you, and you should make them know that they should feel good about themselves around you. When you go into a room, you are attracted to the people that like you. You want to go around them. You don't feel like they're going to cut you down or look for something to criticize. That's who you're drawn to. So we have to be that kind of a person if we want our husband to be drawn to us too. So we got to be careful that we're not, you know, mothering over them, and because no one's going to be romantically interested in their mother. And you want to be encouraging to them, and you want to, you know, you want to do it intentionally, because if you wait to do it when you feel like it's going to go away. So Maya Angelou said, I've learned that people will forget what you said and what you did, but they'll never forget how you make them feel. Like, you know, how do you make people feel? You know, be interested in other people. Don't just be interesting. Be interested. Be interested in what someone else's day is. Like, today I was talking to someone and I was asking them about their kids, and they said, boy, you know, no one asks me about my kids. Thank you for asking. And I was like, that's really sad. you know, we've gotten away from that, where, you know, where we're interested in what other people's lives are, you know. So make other people feel important. You already know everything about yourself, so it can get kind of boring. Why don't you just find out about other people? They all have a story to tell. And, you know, find out about other people. Be interested in what other people are going through. Be an energy giver and have good manners. You know, have good manners. Oh my goodness, good manners make great relationships. My grandpa got married. When my grandma died, he got remarried when he was in his 70s. They were so cute and so in love, and they had the cutest manners with each other. And you know, it's just so nice to have good manners, you know, to see an older couple like that with good manners. Like, that's what I keep telling my husband. I'm like, my goal is so that when we're like 80, that if we said, would you want to get married to that person, you'd still want to marry him. Not just be stuck with them. You'd want to marry him at any point. So you've got to really work on that. It's not going to happen, you know, by mistake. But also let other people shine without one-upping them, you know. If you ever want to see a really funny story, you can look up Brian Regan. He's a really funny comedian, and he talks about the me monster. And he always talks about how if somebody's telling the story about, you know, getting two wisdom teeth out, and then the three wisdom tooth person swoops in. Well, I had three wisdom teeth. And you're like, oh, sorry. Like, no, you, me, you, me. It's like someone's telling you they went on a vacation, you know, up North Higgins Lake. You're like, yeah, I was in, you know, Hawaii or Fiji. You know, it's like, be quiet. It's their vacation they're talking about. Just keep your vacation to yourself. You know what I mean? It's like, give someone a chance to shine, you know? We don't want to be the me monster. That really sticks with me. So, you know, because sometimes you do. You're like, oh, yeah, that happened to me once. But then it's just like, I mean, you think that surgery was a lie. You think what I had to do. You know, it kind of just cuts other people down. It's just like, whoa. You know, and so also don't gossip or laugh at other people. Like, seriously, when someone's talking to me about someone else, I know they're going to be talking about me. I go, yeah, I bet you're going to be talking about me next. You know, I don't like when people talk about other people to me. I'm like, you know, I love that person. Don't tell me that about them. You know, and don't, it's not just about not gossiping. It's not listening to gossip about someone. When you love someone, their name should be safe in your mouth. And when you love someone, and I am telling you, that scripture that says the birds of the air, the secret that's whispered, the birds of the air will bring it back to the king or whatever it is, or shout it from the rooftops or whatever. There's a couple of scriptures actually on that, but I have found that, you know, things get back to people, and they really do. And, you know, I even told my husband, he was going through a really hard time at work, and his boss was really terrible, and they were trying to get, like, I call it an Absalom revolt against him, like getting all these people to go against him in secret and everything. And I said, don't take part in that. Don't ever rehearse anything negative that he said, because any time that man goes to anybody and talks to them about you, I want them to be able to say, you know, Gary's never had anything bad to say about you. Because believe me, it always gets back. Why do you think there's so many problems with daughter-in-laws and sisters and things like that? It's because all these things that shouldn't be being said are being said. And they really are causing problems, and God hates that. It's an abomination. We can't sow discord. So be sure that you're not gossiping, and be sure that you're not listening to gossip. In fact, make it a point, like, never to say anything negative about any of your kids to anybody except for your trusted prayer warrior, that maybe one person that'll get you through to the other side with it. But make sure that you are not recounting someone's weaknesses to them and hating on people, because it will definitely, it just comes back, and it's just not a good situation. So also, what do people remember about them? About you? Do they feel loved? Have you appreciated people? You know, focus on the journey, not the destination. Joy isn't found in finishing an activity, but in doing it. It's really fun to be around someone who's fun and enthusiastic with life, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Sometimes I'll feel like I'll get disappointed in a few things or hear something that somebody said about me or something, and I'll just get really sad or something. Then I'm thinking, I'm losing my enthusiasm. And then I realize the word enthusiasm means in theos, in God. When you're losing your enthusiasm, get back to God. Give what you're worried and care about to God. He will infuse you with a zest for the life that he's given us. So we just want to keep our theos, our enthusiasm for life. Be fun to give people things. Live with joy. Find buried treasures inside of you. There are so many things inside of us. And sometimes, especially with the holidays coming, there's going to be some situations that are going to require you to pull virtue from inside of you and to live it out. Because there's going to be situations with family members, things get messy. I mean, without any oxen, the crib is clean. But what there's a lot of increase with the oxen and a lot of, oxen poop too. So, you have to be careful that, there's a lot inside of you. When the situation comes, embrace it as an opportunity to pull virtue from you, to be able to live in a way that you can feel God smiling on you and say, hey, that's my girl, that's my girl. She's doing what I would do right in that situation. So make sure that you, look and pull things from you. Like when the situation demands it, it's in there. And don't allow negatives to take up space in your life. Don't be Eeyore walking around, making everyone, bringing the cloud into the room. Ask yourself what you can do to make a situation better. Don't complain. My mom said to me today, she goes, you have to leave, because I did all the prep work for her Thanksgiving. I brought over, and then I was running back here. I brought one of the desserts. I was running back here to do a bunch of stuff. And then I was bringing groceries to my daughter, and she's like, you have so much to do. It's so hard. I go, no, you know what? It's really all wonderful things. I am not going to complain about the nice things I am doing right now. They're busy, yes. But God made us to work. He made us to work hard. And you know what? When you're doing wonderful things, don't complain about it. It takes all the fun out of it, And if you're making that Thanksgiving dinner and you have 30,000 dishes and the floor you can't even see and all that stuff, don't complain about it. And then I actually called my sister-in-law on the way home and I said, how are you doing? She goes, oh, I'm good. I'm having the church over for Thanksgiving. And, oh, I'm just so glad. I go, wow, you are so refreshing to talk to. I was just talking to my mom about not complaining about my little things. Here you have an old church over, she's pastor's wife. And I go, you're so chill, And she's just like, I am just enjoying this. I can't wait to see everybody. And I'm thinking, what an energy giver. I mean, I want to be like that. So anyways, don't be strived to get noticed or get all the credit. Don't keep track, Don't worry about what other people are going to do. Don't have hang-ups. I like to keep an invisible sign in my room, no hang-ups allowed. Don't get hung up on stuff. If you find yourself getting hung up on stuff, just picture yourself with that circle in the cross. No hang-ups, Get miserable. And don't get hurt and carry that on and all that stuff. Also, I'm going to just close with these four things that cause marriages to fail. And if you bring these four things inside of your marriage, that will be the most powerful relationship, and it would avoid them failing. And this comes from Dr. Dobson, and I just learned and helped so many marriages with this. But this is the reason couples give up on marriage and go shopping somewhere else, because these things aren't inside their marriage. And they're the things that if you can bring them inside of your marriage, you can utilize your relationship to the extent that it should be. But the first thing is, everyone needs to feel important and noticed. Everyone has that need. So if you can bring that inside of your marriage, then no one has to go shopping around for that. Romance. We need romance. Now, I know men aren't big on romance. But you can use your imagination and light a candle. It doesn't have to be a big deal. Those little things go a long way. Sometimes just holding hands. Whatever. Keep it alive. Sometimes it's up to the woman. Sex and intimacy. We have to have, people have to have that. Bring it inside of your marriage. You're not going to go looking out. And just plain fun. Have fun together. Laugh. Make sure you're having fun together. When's the last time you laughed together? Tell a joke. Find a creative way to get some laughter into your house, because Laughter's like medicine. It's gonna help everything. If you see things in a funny way, turn on Brian Regan, you'll be laughing before you know it. But you really do, you wanna bring that laughter in there and have true intimacy. You know, we have looked, we wanna become women of understanding so that we can learn to accommodate other persons and not let petty annoyances poison our relationships. And we've taken a journey and we've looked at so many tools to help our relationships, and we've left excuses behind because we're not about making excuses. We're about taking responsibility, doing extreme relationships workout, stepping out of our boxes, saying things we weren't comfortable saying, doing things we weren't comfortable doing. But we've thought about and challenged some of our ideas and developed and applied new skills, and we want to have a spirit of a champion, and we want to keep working to improve all of our relationships, not just with our husband, but with our kids and with our, you know, daughter and son-in-laws and our grandkids and our friends and our co-workers. You know, we want to be the best we can be and to be challenged to go to the next level. And a lot of times what we said was, we said that, like, if your potential is here and you're living way below what God has empowered you to live at, you get frustrated and bored and discontent, you know. But when you roll up your sleeves and you're trying to be everything that God made you to be and really utilizing who you are to change your little world where you're involved, then you just get rid of all that discontent and boredom. So I just really challenge you to keep it going and to you let the situations that come on in over the holidays just give you a little open book test that you can see where you're at and challenge yourself. And if you fall and you fall short of what you want to live out, then you just pick yourself back up and you fall forward and you say, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to get involved in those conversations. I'm going to turn those things around. And then you go and you purpose and you make a difference. And that's just the joy that we have and the ability that we have to live to the utmost, because the utmost is inside of us, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this is awesome. Let's just pray. Lord, just thank you for each one.